Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show. This is your host, Stone Payton, and in the studio with me this morning is my good buddy and co-host, Lee Cantor. Good morning, sir.
Stone, how you doing?
I am doing well. I'm well rested, getting very jazzed about Friday. We're going to do another one of our remote broadcasts at one of these award shows. That's going to be fun stuff.
Absolutely. And what award show is this, Stone?
This Spirit of Endeavor. Award show that TAG, Technology Association of Georgia, has every year. But aside from the remote broadcast, actually, I don't know that I'm going to get a chance to participate in the remote broadcast so much. I am, get ready for this,
yes,
the voice of God during the award ceremony. That's what they call it on the script.
You
it
didn't specifically call yourself
says,
that?
I did not choose this name. It is called Voice of God. And so, you know, when you watch the Academy Awards and they say, now introducing third time Oscar nominee, that's me.
Wow, congratulations.
And they want me to work on my southern accent because they want kind of a southern flair to
that's
it.
Good.
So I'll be practicing all week.
All right, you have a coach for that?
You know what? I may have found one this morning in one of our guests. We'll see.
Really?
So we have some finalists for that that awards presentation with us this morning. And in a little while, we're going to hear from Rod Whitman, Senior VP Product Management and Marketing with Cardlytics, who is a finalist in that award show. But first up, on the High Velocity Radio Show this morning, it is my distinct pleasure to introduce retired Brigadier General Stuart Roadheaver with Visitech USA. Welcome to the show, man.
Good morning, Stone. I appreciate you having me here.
Well, we are delighted to have you. Visitech USA, tell us a little bit about that organization and what you guys are out there doing for folks.
I will. Thanks. We started a company when I retired from the military in 2009 to reach the millennium generation soldiers. We found out that as we were trying to teach the younger generation, we weren't quite reaching them the way we wanted to. So we started developing 3D and virtual classrooms for the Department of Defense, and now we've branched out to schools and also to a lot of companies.
Well, and training, it's my understanding, and I'm not military. I grew up in a military town. I grew up in Pensacola, Florida, so but I'm not military. My family is not military, but it's my understanding.
But you do watch NCIS.
I do watch NCIS, okay, absolutely. So. and that movie, Major Payne, that
okay.
was good.
Those are good references.
But it's my understanding that the military is particularly adept at and has a great reputation for developing leaders and just training in general. Could you speak to that? Why are they so good at it?
Well, for one reason, they have to be. And you know, it's a very critical skill that you learn what you're doing inside the military because you never know when you're going to have to operate inside of a combat zone. But one of the reasons that they're so good at it is because they make sure that the soldier doesn't just hear what's going on and doesn't just see what's going on, but they experience the training. And that's really what we based our company on, is experience-based training, putting something in your hands, letting you operate the machinery or the equipment and learn, because you're not just seeing and hearing, you're seeing, hearing, and you're actually touching the equipment also.
Now, do you find that people need to learn in all three of those ways, or do you think the experiential way is kind of supersedes the other two?
Well, people learn in all ways, but studies show that if you look at a class that's being taught by a PowerPoint and a lecture, they really only retain information at about a 12% to 15% level. If you get it down to where they're seeing it and hearing it, then they're down about a 45 to 50%. But if they experience, if they get it in their hands or if they touch it with their hands and they talk about it with their classmates, they get down to about the 80% or 85% learning retention level, and that's where we're operating with our company right now.
Now, are you guys content agnostic, or do you specialize in certain areas of content, or does this technology lend itself to virtually any kind of training?
It actually lends itself to a lot of different things. We started out, as I said, for the Department of Defense, and we were doing some maintenance programs. We could take a tank apart in 3D in a classroom. We could roll a tank into
wow.
the room, take it apart in 3D. And from that, we branched out. They asked us to do some work for them in biometrics and forensics. So we started taking fingerprints, face scans, and iris scans in 3D so that the soldier and the analyst didn't just see the flat fingerprint. They also got to see the ridges and lines inside the fingerprint. And the same way with the face analysis, they got to see the curvature of the face instead of just a flat picture of the face. What we've done since then, though, we have had companies come to us and say, my new employees are not learning at the rate I want them to. Can you help us? So we've done some work right now for Southern Company, for Georgia Power Company. We're doing some work for Gulfstream Aviation down in Savannah, helping them get their employees ready faster and retain more, because, again, this is a way to let them not just see things, but also touch it and make it work. And then the other part we're doing is we started branching out because we got so many requests from schools. Schools, biology teachers, chemistry teachers would say, I see what you're doing in 3D. I'm a teacher. What can you do for me? So now we've developed about 1,000 lessons in chemistry, biology, anatomy, math, physics, automotive mechanics, aviation mechanics, etc., that we're teaching in high schools, middle schools, and colleges.
Now, does this replace teachers, or this gives them another tool to use?
No, it does not replace teachers at all. What it does is it gives them a very visual and virtual way to engage the students. You know, a lot of the things we heard from teachers were that they were having to compete with the cell phones, the smartphones, and the things that the students were learning from the way that they learn now. You know, the millennium generation children right now, they learn off of three screens, and they learn off of a television, a laptop, and a smartphone, and I call them screenagers. And if they don't, if we don't reach them that way, if we don't reach them that way, we typically don't give them the information the way that they're learning on their own. So the teachers were competing, so what we're doing is giving them a way so they don't have to compete. They can engage the students, and the students really like it.
Now, is all 3D equal? Because I know I've gone to 3D movies, and some of them look like you're immersed in the action, and other ones look like kind of 2D, and they're trying to just trick me in a 3D way.
Yeah, all 3D is not equal. There's several different kinds of 3D, and it's a long way of explaining them to you, but active versus passive, stereoscopic versus auto-stereoscopic, and it's just a matter of how it's filmed and how it's presented in which way that it comes across best to the watcher, the student.
Well, I mean, that's helpful, but you got to understand Lee's not familiar with terms like haptic manipulation and some of these things, so we got to be careful.
Thanks for covering
that. You want me to explain it to you? You know
yeah.
what? I'm going to let him explain
okay,
it to
good.
You.
Okay, good. Okay. Again, one of the things that we wanted to make sure that students did was we wanted them to experience doing this. So if you are sitting in a normal classroom and a teacher is trying to show you something, they hold up something in the front of the room or they point to it on the screen, then the student still has to look around and see what the teacher's got or what's going on. With our 3D, the way we've got it set up, if we have 30 children in the room and we're looking at a heart, every student has a heart in the air in front of them.
Wow.
And we have it so that the teacher does not have to have a mouse or a controller in their hands. When we started out...
Or a real heart.
Or a real heart, that's right. This is all. These are all images, so nobody's getting bloody here. But we started out doing this with a little keyboard, and then we did it with a Wii wand. And the soldiers, first time I did it for soldiers with a Wii wand, they told me that was an old man's game, so we switched it to an Xbox 360 controller. But now we have invented for this haptic manipulation so that a teacher can stand up there with just their hands, and they can dissect a frog, or they can move images around, or, again, for some of the companies we're doing, we can put a piece of machinery in the air, and they can walk up to it, flip the switches, flip the breakers, and actually make the machine run inside the room.
So what is the relationship with TAG? How did you get involved with these folks? How did you get on their radar? Did you seek them out? How does that work?
Honestly, was surprised when I got contacted by an organization in Middle Georgia, and the Chamber of Commerce in the county where I live sent me a note, said that they had heard about TAG, and they wanted to submit me for these awards. And so I sent them a short summary and then didn't really know what to expect out of it. And then the next thing I knew, I got a notice from TAG that we had been selected in the top five.
Well, it sounds to me like it's very well-deserved. I want to hear more about the company, but I also want to dive into this this awards thing that we're going to have an opportunity to participate in, Lee. With your permission, Brigadier General, I'd also like to introduce our other guest.
Absolutely.
Mr. Rod Whitman with Cardlytics, Senior VP, Product Management and Marketing. Welcome to the show, man.
Thank you very much, sir. No, I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Now, wasn't it cool how we were able to get him here in 3D?
It's almost like he's really here, right?
It's almost like I'm an unreal hologram.
Well, I tell you, the first question out of the box for me, I understand that you're ex-military as well, if there is such a thing as ex-military. I'm not even sure that that's an appropriate phrase. I'd like to hear from you both, but I'd like to start with you, Rod. What influence, if any, and what advantages, if any, has it been to have been in the military when it comes to this business of running a business?
I think the biggest thing is, similar to what the Brigadier General was saying, you are prepared and trained, and you're put in such situations at such a young age that you're ready for anything at any moment. I was an officer in the Royal Navy for a dozen years. I spent half of that navigating ships and half of that navigating helicopters. One of the situations I was put in, I was navigating a minesweeper when the Iraqis mined the Strait of Hormuz, 1987-88, and there I was, my first job, navigating a minesweeper in a live minefield. So you get put into situations where, you know, the military is really good at putting the right people in the right place, with into the right role, and then training them for anything and everything. And I think that at the core makes you, gives you the confidence to take on most things with an open mind. You can't beat that. You just can't beat that.
Well, I have to believe that what for somebody like me might be a little bit threatening and intimidating, like this big board meeting that I may have coming up, that's probably, you probably see that through a very different lens if part of your history is navigating a minefield. It's probably just not that big a deal, is it?
Yeah, it's a great point, Stone. I've been involved in probably four startups in my time. The first startup was during the internet rush out in Silicon Valley, and it was classic internet startup. It was, you know, the highs are very high, the lows are very low, but probably I describe it as the most exhilarating business experience I'd ever had, and my benchmark is flying a helicopter in the Navy. But at the backdrop of that, when everybody's running around getting really scared and really worried, and we're going to, you know, who knows what's going to happen, it's sort of easy to step back and say, it almost doesn't matter because no one's going to die today. When I was navigating a helicopter, if I get that wrong, helicopter falls out of the air and it doesn't swim too well. So
let's hear a little bit about Cardlytics. Tell us a little bit about this business and what kinds of things you guys are doing for folks.
Sure. Cardlytics is a great company. Really, I've been there for 2.5 years now. Absolutely love it. It's a brilliant example of a brilliant idea with even average execution is always going to be way better than an average idea with brilliant execution. Mm-hmm. It's a brilliant idea. What we do is we enable banks to present offers to their customers based on that customer's actual spend. So they're very relevant to that customer. So basically an offer would show up in online banking or in mobile banking from a merchant based on that customer's spend. So they're all very, very relevant, very rich. And it's all done in a way which completely protects the consumer's privacy. So there's no personally identifiable information in the system whatsoever. And it also protects the bank's transaction data. No transaction data ever has to leave the bank. It all remains behind the bank's firewalls.
Can you kind of walk us through that? Like, say I bank at one of your clients' banks. What would happen? I'm online doing my banking, and then an offer would appear?
Sure. Great question, Lee. So if I'm, and I have my own account with one of the banks we launched, I go into online banking. And I'm looking in my transaction table, that table that shows each of the transaction lines.
So that's all my bills. So like you can see that I shop maybe at a florist.
Correct.
Right?
You know, my recent purchases, I'd have gone to Kroger and Publix and all your transactions. Basically, we take offers from merchants and we take targeting criteria from those merchants. And we match the offers against the spend of people with the bank account. And basically, next to that transaction or directly beneath that specific transaction, we'll actually insert an offer. An offer may say, earn reward at such and such a merchant. You actually click that offer. It would expand. It shows you the logo. It shows you the detail of the offer. In that one click, you've now activated the offer. And you've essentially loaded it onto your card associated with that account. So it will be loaded, in my case, onto my debit card. Thereafter, all I have to do is use my debit card to make the purchase at the relevant store. And I'll get notified immediately that that transaction clears, that I've earned the reward. And then we have a small summary table, what we call a reward summary, that shows me all the rewards I've earned in any particular month. All of those rewards are aggregated together, and then they're posted as a credit into my account at the end of the next month. So it's super, super simple for a consumer.
And then so is your biggest challenge getting the banks to let you do this, or is it to get the merchants to be part of the offers for the banks?
A little bit of both. We sit in the middle. We've been very, very fortunate and successful on the bank side. We're live now with about 200 banks. We reach somewhere around 17 million households, about 50 million plus consumers. We have some of the largest banks in the U.S. Launched with, and we're live, including Regions and PNC, AccountNow, NetSpend. We have about 180-odd banks through a relationship we have with Intuit. We have a relationship with Fiserv. Intuit and Fiserv are two of the largest online banking providers to small banks. And then we're also launching one of the top four banks in the U.S. We're live with them now, but we're not launched, and we're launching in the first half of next year. By that point, we'll be in 75 million households, reaching somewhere around 200 million consumers.
So one of my banks, and Lee, you know I have a bunch because I got to keep things, I got to spread the wealth, right?
Right.
But one of them is being bought by PNC. So I anticipate getting some offers for beer and barbecue, and you'll keep getting offers for sports cars and jewelry.
Exactly.
Because they know their customer. That is so, it sounds so sophisticated to me. Wow.
You know what? It's so sophisticated, but it from a consumer's perspective, it's such a simple process. The nice thing is a consumer can very easily spend between or earn between $100 to $200 buying the kinds of things that they'd be buying anyway, because we know what their purchase patterns look like. But there's no cap on the rewards that can be earned. We've seen individual transactions that have generated hundreds of dollars of reward. And then, Lee, to follow up on your question, on the merchant side, we basically work with the top 200 merchants in the U.S. With a direct sales force. Currently, we have probably between 50 and 75 who are actively in the system. And then we have a small local business sales force that hits that we're moving towards the top 30 MSAs. We're probably in about the top 10 MSAs in the United States at the moment.
So you're deploying them in the markets around the country?
Correct. We're as a company, we're at about 100 employees today. We launched in 2008, and we're hiring probably about another 100 in the next 6 to 9 months. So we've established a pretty rapid growth, and it's literally a case when people see the demonstration of the offers in the online banking, it's very easy to understand, wow, yeah, this makes a ton of sense. It's very easy.
Right, it's easy and seamless. There's no friction in this.
Correct. Really easy.
Now, I know you're based here in Atlanta. Do you do most of your business here in Atlanta, or are you just around, kind of spread around the country?
Headquarters is here in Atlanta. We're in North Avenue in Midtown, but we have probably about another dozen people. Basically, the external sales force is around the country.
Uh-huh.
So I want to hear from both of you, but I'd like to start with you if we could. Rod, tell us a little bit about your experience with this TAG Spirit of Endeavor. What's that been like? What can we expect when we see this thing on Friday? Any idea?
Yeah, the TAG Spirit of Endeavor, the award that we're up for is the Cool Technology Award, which I think is great. I love the fact that we're here in Atlanta. We've got some great colleges here in Georgia, and I know there'll be a lot of people out there that will respond to a company engaged in a cool technology award. TAG's been a supportive organization. I think they do a fine job here in Atlanta trying to help support the technology organizations. One particular subset of TAG that we're actively involved in is the fintech side, financial technology organizations. They have some really good events and really good networking activities.
Well, it sounds like a marvelous organization. Brigadier General, your experience in history with TAG, you're a member of this outfit as well, or how's that work?
Actually, we're becoming a member. I was not aware of TAG. Again, my background was all military, so I didn't really know them until we started this process. But as we grow more and more in the technology field, we're quickly becoming aware of the prime organizations that make things happen in the technology field around Georgia, and this is the prime target for us. So we're learning them very quickly, and we are becoming a member.
So what's been your favorite part about the process so far? I'm operating under the impression you must have had to at some point submit something that says, "Hey, this is what we're doing." Kind of walk us through that, if you would.
Sure. We got a form from them to ask us to kind of give a summary about what we do, and then we also had to. Or we were offered the opportunity to do a 60-second video for them that we posted on YouTube for them, and we did both of those things. And the team that we worked with, of people that gave us information, gave us how to do these things. I mean, they were phenomenal. They did a really good job of laying out the process, explaining it to us, explaining how to do it, providing us the support structure to do it, and then just making it easy to do.
Now, did you use the 3D as part of your presentation? Or?
Well, if we do it in 3D, you see it in 2D unless you have a 3D computer. So we actually did the video. You can see the 3D things, but most people who see it will see it in 2D unless they happen to have a 3D computer.
I'm just absolutely fascinated with that technology. I would love to go to some sort of training event, and I don't care what the content is. I would just love to see this thing in action. That would be so cool.
Well, I brought you a sample, and I'll show it to you after we finish here. But I'll show you 3D with no glasses that we did. This is one of the ways that we help develop things for companies. Is we take their training processes, we put them on small monitors, like a 7-inch monitor, which is what I have with me today, and I'll show you some of the 3D with no glasses we've done for them.
Well, that'll be fun stuff. And then on the horizon, I gotta believe 3D radio, right?
Yeah, can you do that? You can make audio 3D.
Well, I think audio is pretty 3D right now, depending on how you stand out there and listen to it. So, if I could, on the military things that you're saying, I think you're spot on as far as what it taught us. The two things that I brought from the military that really helped me in business: number one, they taught me that hope is not a method. So hoping will never get you there. And then the other thing they taught me is that the plan is only good till you start working. And once you make the first move, then the plan changes. So
right,
flexibility.
Mike Tyson said, "Everybody has a plan until I hit him in the face."
That's exactly right. Well, in the military, we say the plan's good till the first bullet flies.
Right. So. Well, I tell you what, a lot of our listeners are entrepreneurs or aspire to be entrepreneurs, and I'd like to know from each of you if there were any advice you could give to someone that is thinking about getting a business off the ground. Or they're just getting started, and they're living through those highs and lows that you talked about, Rod. And we'll start with you, Brigadier General. Any advice that you might have for that up-and-comer, some do's or don'ts that you might share with them?
Well, I think the biggest thing I tell anybody who says, "I'm thinking about starting a business," I tell them to do it. You know, you can think about it for a long time and never gain anything from it, but if you do it, you start figuring out what works, what doesn't work, how to make things better, if your plan's going to work. You know, develop you a good plan, make sure your finances are straight. But if you got the idea and you've got the itch, then the only way to really do it is to get your feet wet, is jump in and do it.
Yeah, and I'd say the Brigadier General is absolutely right. The key thing is understand your idea really, really well, as best you think you can. Put it on paper, work out the numbers, get the cash to support it, and do that as rapidly as you can. But you're never going to understand what your business is really about until you start it. That's the point at which the business really starts to crystallize.
Is that when you're talking with young people, do you find that that fear of actually starting is the biggest hurdle?
Absolutely.
And I think there's a desire there to get the plan perfect before you start. And it's almost a critical error, because if you try to get the plan perfect before you start, you're never going to start.
So err on the side of action.
Err on the side of action. You know, being an infantry officer, just go get it. You know, I mean, really, they've got to get out there and try this, or they'll never know if they can do it. And the fear of failure is what stops most people. They're afraid they're going to fail, and somebody's going to think badly of them, and you know, everybody fails. So just take a shot, give it your best shot, and go after it.
Well, I think that's inspiring counsel. Before we let you go, I want to make sure that our listeners know how to get in touch with you guys if they want to learn more about your organization, potential clients, or someone that may want to find a way to participate in some way. We'll start with you, Rod. If you would, what's the best way for someone to reach out and learn more about Cardlytics?
Probably the best way is the website, www.cardlytics.com. There's a contact form right there, and if push comes to shove, people are more than welcome to reach out to me personally, RWITMOND@cardlytics.com.
And are you presently looking for a certain category of merchant? Are you focusing on a certain industry that you'd like folks to reach out?
You know what, we've had great success with various verticals. What we find is the things that people would buy on a regular basis are things that absolutely work very well in our system. So obviously we've got a lot of food in the system, we've got a lot of retail, we've got a lot of apparel, a lot of services. So things that people would buy on a frequent basis. The thing that's interesting with our business is, obviously, as I said, we've got a direct and national sales force that's reached out to the really big guys. But the more we've seen our system actually integrated into the bank site, the more small business local owners will see it in their own accounts, and their immediate reaction is, hey, this is really cool. I want my business in here. And we end up getting quite a lot of leads through the banks. Same rules, though. And if you're in food, if you're in retail, if you're in apparel, big box services, you're probably going to be a pretty good fit for us.
Excellent. And Brigadier General, what's the best way for folks to reach out and learn more about Visitech?
Really the same way, www.visitechusa.com. Or you can me directly. Mine is csr@visitechusa.com. And one of the common mistakes we have is V-I-Z-I instead of V-I-S-I. But if you do that, it's pretty easy to get in touch with us.
Well, it has been an absolute delight having you both on the show. And an idea occurred to me, Lee, I wanted to see what you thought about this as well as you two guys. I think it would make for a really strong show to have these guys come back sometime with a delighted client and hear from their perspective about your business and the value they've gotten from it. Would you guys be up for that sometime?
Sure.
Yeah, I'd love to. Love to do that.
Yeah. Would you be willing to do that, Lee?
All right. As long as he shows us that 3D modeling
thing. Right.
I'll show it to you. That's very important.
Until next time, this is Stone Payton, Lee Cantor, our guest this morning, Brigadier General Stuart Roadheaver, and Rod Whitman, and everyone here at the Business Radio X family, saying we'll see you in the fast lane.